Hey, it's Adam from Hi Friends, doing just a bit of a quick disclaimer before the rest of the episode today. Just wanted to let you know that neither myself nor my guest, Chris Gadd, are medical professionals in any way. So please don't take anything we say in this episode as fact. If you relate to anything we're saying, be sure to go talk to somebody who may be able to help point you in the right direction. We use the word normal a few times throughout the episode. Normal is a word that I have used many times since discovering cannabis and its profound impact on my life. Way before autism was on my radar, I started telling people that cannabis helped me feel normal. We were not trying to say that autistic people are not normal or that anything is normal. Normal doesn't exist. We're all people. We're all different. And to quote my friend Ryan Hack, it's awesome. Please forgive any time we misspeak or maybe use the wrong acronym while referring to any diagnosis. All right, that's enough of a disclaimer. Here's the show. It's time for We're pastors' kids, and I'm curious, what was the religious bent for you on your TikTok initially?
So I want to be careful because I guess I don't know your audience exactly or your views on things. So
I can say this. My two guests ago was a guy named Leif Anderson who has a show called Let's Get High and Read the Bible. And we talked extensively about how church is bullshit. So feel free to say whatever you want.
I will go from there then. I was not a PK. But I was raised in a very deeply evangelical household. Nazarene is what it is. A lot of people haven't heard of it. But...
I am very familiar with that.
Okay. Yeah. So like we drinking was a no-no, like at all. My mom has never had alcohol in her life. My dad used to drink, but he hasn't drank in like 30 years. We weren't allowed to go to dances. Dancing, not okay. We couldn't like even go to the mall on like a Sunday. So just like very conservative. And I think in the back of my head, I always knew like, this is bullshit. Like there's something wrong with this. And so I moved to college and my life went on and I became an atheist. And over the years, especially with a lot of like politics and like how evangelical Christianity has been very deeply involved in that, I have become very strong in my opinions. And a year and a half ago, I quit my job to take care of a family member that had some health issues that only lasted a few months. And at that point, my wife was like, you fucking hate like working in an office. Like, let's try and figure out something that's going to work for you. And all I knew was like, I want to do something creative. So I started making art, but I have no formal education in art. Turns out I was better at sculpting than I realized. So that's kind of what I was pursuing, but I couldn't really build much of a following. And my wife kept saying, you need a social media presence. And I'm like, I'll do that once I have good art. And
hold on. There's so many similarities already between you and I. It's very strange, but like that's every creative endeavor I've ever done where it's like, no, I'll worry about a website. I'll worry about the social media once I have the pro gear and a professional product to put out there.
Yeah. It's like, you want to be taken seriously. And so I think there's always a fear with creating where it's like, if you start too early, then you might be known for your earlier work that is not as good, which is just the process of creating. Like that's how it's supposed to be. My wife was like, no, like you need to have a media presence. So when you do make good art, then like you have an audience already. And so I started like doing Instagram and things like that. And TikTok was just kind of an afterthought. I kind of started having more fun with it. And I started debating people a lot about religion and things like that. And I would do like art videos too, but they never did that well. So then I tried doing like art videos where I talked about religion and those like did okay. But then after I got the autism diagnosis, I started talking about that a little bit. And that's like really where it took off. Like that's when I started getting a lot of attention. And I realized like, holy shit, like people really associate with this. And I started seeing like, there's a ton of other autistic creators on TikTok. There are some really good creators that I've been following for a long time. It's actually how I started figuring out that I was autistic. But I saw holes with like the content that they were making, like specifically around talking about relationships, not just like marriage or like a romantic partner, but I mean, even like friendships and just like day-to-day talking to people. And so I started talking about that stuff and that like took off. And then I started doing more like skit-based stuff. And that's kind of like brought me to where we are today.
I love it. Listeners, hi friends, by the way, I'm here talking with my new friend, Chris Gadd. You might know him from TikTok. If you happen to be on the neurodivergent algorithm like myself, you undoubtedly have seen Chris and his work. He's the guy who's got the microphone clipped to his glasses. We're definitely going to talk about that because every time I show my wife a video, she goes, why does he do that? And I go, I don't know, but it works. So if you're wondering who this is, you can certainly go check out his stuff. His links to everything, all of his socials and where where you can find them. They're down below. Chris, thank you so much for choosing to come on. I'm always worried reaching out to people. It goes back to my religious upbringing, being concerned about what people are going to think about cannabis or weed when I say, hey, I host a weed podcast. Will you come on? And, you know, not your content really has nothing to do with marijuana. So I kind of reached out like out of the blue just because. But Chris, I'm sorry. We'll steer away from your religious background a little bit. I want to know if I'm right about what I'm picturing though. Were there a lot of denim skirts or denim dresses in your history?
I know exactly what you're talking about, and fuck yes, there were a lot. we live in Colorado now. I'm originally from the Midwest, and like every once in a while, I'll see a group of women walking down the street that all have long denim dresses, and I'm like, oh, I know what's going on here. It's Sunday, you're leaving church. a lot of long dresses in my childhood.
Yeah. So I went to I'm a pastor's kid, but my grandfather was a pastor who started the Christian kindergarten through high school that I went through all throughout.
Okay.
And so I got to meet all kinds of crazy religious people, whether they were Catholic, Nazarene, super evangelical, all that good stuff. I currently would describe myself as a hopeful agnostic. I don't know if there's a God, but because a lot of my, you know, nostalgia is like tied to the community aspect of church, I hope that there's something, but I don't know. It's weird. I'm curious though. So Chris, you have autism. That's not news to you, but if my listeners don't know, you do. And I wanted to talk to you about it because I'm pretty suspicious that I do. And every time I've ever tried to talk to an adult who's known me my entire life about it, they're just like, yeah, but you talk and you can get on stage and you make jokes and all this kind of stuff. So there's a little bit of me that really just invited you on to just talk to somebody who I am like, if I have autism, I have this level of autism because Chris is a guy who talks and makes jokes and can entertain. And so I don't really have a great jumping off point. For me, it's been one of those things. You said that it was TikTok that kind of helped you point you in the direction of like, hey, this might be autism. Same thing. And I think we're going to see obviously like a generation of people who are just like,
Oh, yes.
And my biggest concern has always been going to see a professional and saying, well, it was TikTok, and just having them laugh in my face. And so I'd love for you to just kind of talk in general about content creation on TikTok with autism. And I know you have a great video on YouTube about, so you think you might be autistic, what are the next steps? But part of this, I really want to do you a service because part of this is there's only so much in recorded content that's like scripted that you can do, but there's a back and forth that's going to happen here that will help a lot of people. And so I'd love to just have a jumping off point of you talking about that video that I found that I discovered autism or whatever it was called. But that specific video, that really resonated with me a lot. When I think of your content, it is like a crystal ball into my head. So I really struggle, Chris, because I don't want to refer to myself as autistic. But like right now, what I want to say is, you know how we will pre-plan everything so that we know exactly what to expect and how it's going to go. That's what I do in my head when I think about going to see a mental health professional about this. And your TikToks where you're kind of digging at mental health professionals at being like, hey, you got to be better. It depicts what my worst fears are. And I'm like, this guy is in my fucking head. And so I think part of it is that I want to talk to you because I kind of feel like that's probably where a lot of people like me who are unsure find themselves. And so you just went through that. You went through the same thing with TikTok and then you took the steps. And it's scary. And I kind of want this episode to just take away some of that fear for people, you know?
Yeah. And I get that. A lot of what you're saying is a lot of what I felt early on. And that is why I am making this content. Like, obviously I have other hopes and aspirations as well. Like I would like to get into writing and like screenplays and things like that. But like, if I can help people, especially with this process, which like to me is very, you know, it's a recent wound. It's something that I relate to very much, which really was like 34 years in the making, like my whole life of struggling and trying to fucking figure out like what the hell is going on with my brain? Like, why do I see things so differently than everyone else? And a big part of that, like we were talking about religion and being raised that way, for the longest time, I thought that's what it was. I thought it was, okay, I have a sheltered upbringing. I am aware that I'm very sheltered right now. I am aware that I exist in a world that is very different than a lot of the rest of the world. A lot of the time, that is what I thought is what's going on in my head is like, okay, I'm sheltered. I'm shy. I've been taught to like stay out of the way, not like step on people's toes, be very aware of other people. So I thought a lot of my overthinking was just like, I was taught to be like very careful. I'm assuming that you relate to that of your upbringing as well.
So I am a pastor's kid, but I'm a pastor's kid who, and my listeners have heard this a couple of times. My dad was a pastor who encouraged me to try LSD my entire life. I never touched an illicit drug until I was 32 and I tried cannabis for the first time, and it radically changed my life. I wrote an article about how it became my new gospel. It's the thing I have to evangelize. And if I'm autistic, if I'm neurodivergent, I'm at least ADHD. I know for sure. Cannabis was a huge part of that discovery, because the first time that I tried cannabis, that those first few months, one of the things I would say to my wife all the time is, I feel normal. For the first time in my life, I feel normal. And she'd say, what do you mean? And I say, I have always felt other and less than, and I've never been able to figure out why. But whatever happens with cannabis, it takes me and goes, okay, what you assume everybody else in the world feels like, you get to feel that now.
And that I relate to too. Like I don't smoke or like do edibles a ton, but I'd say like a couple times a month on average, and like give or take. But the reason I do it a lot of times is, like you said, it's like, it's a moment of feeling normal, or just kind of like, my theory is, a lot of what people see as autism is, from my experience, very much related to just thinking a lot. Like, my brain is always churning. When I smoke or I have a gummy, it gives me like a couple of hours of feeling normal. Like, I can watch a movie and enjoy it, because most of the time when I'm watching movies, I'm like, how could it end? Here are like 10 different possible endings. Here's the one that I think it is. And then when they have a surprise ending, it's like, yeah, I thought of that. And like, I'm not trying to be like, oh, I'm smart. It's not that. It's just that like, I'm always like thinking of everything.
My wife and I have a thing called an Adam response, where she'll ask me a question. It's the same thing that you're talking about with movies. She'll ask me a question about something I have absolutely no business knowing. And what I say is, well, I'm going to give you an Adam response, which is, I don't know if it's right, but I bet you 85% chance it's probably pretty close to being right. And I refer to a Rolodex in my brain, where I just go through every possible opportunity in a matter of seconds. And it just, I spit out the one that makes the most sense, the most logical, practical sense. And it's the same thing for me in movies. 15 minutes into a movie, my wife hates watching it with me, because I've already figured out every single viable plot point, and I've figured out which ones are going to happen.
And I'm assuming that you were like, you mentioned the Rolodex thing, which is the thing that I don't know if I think I've talked about in some of my videos, but it's a thing that I relate to as well. Again, using like the movie example, it's a lot of like pulling from past experiences. And it's like, okay, I've seen other movies that have a general plot line similar to this one. And like, here's how they had an ending. Here are the twists that they had. Here's how they made it look like there was going to be a twist, and then they had a different twist. I'm just always pulling those things as like,
I think for me with movies specifically, I'm very interested in people and how they work, and why they act the way they do, what motivates them, because it's never made sense. Like, it's not very practical or logical. So part of it is just, because if you're a screenwriter, if you're writing a movie, you're trying to write a real person, right? And so because I've just spent my entire life trying to figure out how people work, when I see a person on screen, even as a character, I'm like, well, what logically makes sense for this character is this. And then I do exactly what you're talking about as well, where I try to relate it to another movie character and go, well, here's what, you know, the surprise was for the extra excitement. So you got to modify it. That's interesting. You were talking about how it's overthinking. A lot of what you experienced in your past, you realize it's like overthinking, just thinking tons and tons. There was a TikTok by another creator about anxiety, and he's a stand-up comedian, and I can't think of his name, but he lists all of these things about being in an airplane as it's as it's like getting ready to dock back at the airport or whatever. And he lists all this stuff that he does in preparation, and somebody was like, oh, you must have anxiety. And he was like, oh, I thought I was just being a good person. Because that resonated with me a lot of like, one thing that's very common for me in a conversation with people is that I try to make sure that I am mirroring them. Like, if they're having a really good time, yep, I need to be having a good time. It's at least 25% of my brain's focus when I'm in a conversation. To me, I'm just like, well, that's just being a good person. And then I started getting onto the neurodivergent algorithm on TikTok, and it was like, oh, no, people don't focus on that at all. They can just do it.
It's funny you mentioned mirroring, because this week I have one of the things I'm recording is a skit about mirroring, and talking about how like that was something that I developed over my lifetime to, for me, it was almost a way to cheat the system of how like I am very hyper aware of things. Mirroring became like a hack for me to like almost put that part on autopilot. But I know what you mean, because it's like, I mean, there are definitely times where I'm also very much thinking about it. It's like, okay, is this person having a good time? Oh, this person's low energy. I don't want to be too much energy, because then I'm like stealing the show, or like I don't want to steamroll them. Or like if they're really high energy, like I need to be high energy. And then it's like, but am I being fake right now? And it's like just so much going through at once. But
I'd be curious about your TikTok autism discovery. And listeners, I know that we're jumping around. I'm so sorry. It's just, there, you know, I'm interested in so much of what Chris has to talk about. But I'd be really curious about the actual TikTok journey for you, because for me, I started going, oh, I'm severely ADHD. And that makes that, I look at that realization was like, it forced me to look back on my life and go, oh, if you'd have known. And then I started telling some adult family members, yeah. And they're like, that doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, yeah, but you still have the understanding from 1989 of what ADHD is. And that's pretty drastically incorrect. And then that helped me realize that I was hypervigilant and overthinking about everything. And that, and suddenly in June of this year, I was sent to the grocery store. We were visiting my wife's folks in Wisconsin. And I was sent to the grocery store to pick two things up. And it was done in a way that I would not do it. They were pre-ordered from two different locations within the same grocery store. And I sat in the grocery store and had a complete panic attack in my car in the parking lot, because I realized, oh, like the overthinking of this causes anxiety. And then very slowly, ADHD and anxiety TikTok was like, hey, but maybe you should look at this this thing called autism, because maybe those are just two symptoms of autism. So I'm curious, for you,
the autism stuff was early 2021.
Okay. So was there a progression, like for me, where you started going, oh, here's some mental health stuff that makes sense. Here's some, and then it was just like a math problem.
Yeah. So I'll try to stick relatively high level, unless you want me to go into more detail. But you know, my whole life, as far back as I can remember, I've always been, like I was telling you earlier, like I just felt different. Like I felt like I didn't see things like other people. So I'd always been wondering what was going on, and always like self-monitoring myself. A few years into my marriage, especially after we had our first kid, which was when I turned 30, so 4.5 years ago, you know, every marriage has issues, and we were, you know, working through things, trying to figure things out. But we started noticing a lot of problems or issues, I guess, that were stemming from my behavior. And I was able to change a lot of things, but then we started like finding things where it's like, this is very core to like who I am. And this, I don't know how to change. Or it feels like if I change this, like there's something fundamentally wrong with that. Like it's not okay. I really struggled after our first kid was born. Initially, I went in to see a psychologist because we thought that I was bipolar, because I would have manic depressive states. Like I would have days, sometimes weeks, where I was just go, go, go. And then I would have days, sometimes months, where I was just depressed and like nothing. I didn't want to do anything. And I was basically just doing things as like a robot. And I went in, I started talking to the psychologist about it. And she's like, this is ADHD. She's like, it manifests in symptoms that look like bipolar disorder, because you have the up and the down. And that's what people associate with BPD. But you have ADHD. And she's like, let's put you on some medication for it. And so they put me on the medication. And that was a huge fucking help. Like that was life-changing.
I want to ask you about that, because I have some fantasy in my head that if I get put on Ritalin, that I'll suddenly be able to create in the way that I've always dreamt of creating. I've been a musician my entire life. I've put out music. I've been podcasting for 10 years, but there's always a part of me that's just like, I just want to do this part and the editing. Yeah. I love editing, but I don't want to do the promotion. I don't want to do any of that. And I have this fantasy that if I get on some ADHD medication, at least part of that's going to come easier. Is that what happened?
So I know that people have very mixed feelings on like ADHD medication. So first thing I want to say is it's not for everybody, but it is definitely helpful for some people. I think for a lot of people. So for me, it was a huge help. And what it did for me was, so I'm on Adderall. It's a stimulant. I've tried other things that didn't work the same. But with the extended release Adderall that I'm on, what it basically does is it gives me the energy to do the things that I otherwise am like very averse to doing. Oh. So when you're saying that you want to do like the promotions and things like that, I still struggle with that. Like I make the TikToks, I have a pretty decent following, but TikTok doesn't pay you shit. And like, I'm trying to figure out, like, I am not, this is my job now. Like, I don't have another job. I need to find ways to monetize this, like in an ethical way. But a lot of that is like, okay, I need to design like shirts and I need to like get into like this stuff and like set up a Patreon. And like, I feel what you're saying. It's like, I don't fucking want to do that. I don't want to do that. I just want to create, because that is like what I am.
Do you think that a little bit of that goes back to you and I both expressed a drive or a passion for not doing things like that until we have like a professional, like I will never do a podcast until I have this very expensive microphone, until I have this very expensive, like, so there's part of me that's like, yeah, I could do merch for this show right now, but I could afford to do really shitty merch. And I don't want to fucking do that.
Yeah. I mean that, so at first I was going to disagree with you. And then you said that, and I'm like, no, that is, that's spot on. Because one of the things I thought about is like, you know, I could do shirts. The problem is that I want to do it the right way. I don't want to just find some company that prints shirts and then like people order them and it's like, well, it doesn't fit me right. Like it makes me look fat. So my thinking is like, okay, I want to find the right way to do it. And to do that means that I am going to have to go through a process of figuring out like what types of articles of clothing, like all these sites offer, like how well they fit, all that shit. Or like find out like, maybe I should get into screen printing, like, which I have the equipment for, never done, but I have the equipment for it. Should I buy like shirts that fit well, like true classic shirts, and then like screen print them and send them out? But that's more work for me. Anyways,
do you have a thought regularly of like, if I just had a team, if I could afford a production team, this would all be perfect because my ideas are great. I just don't have the time or energy to actually implement each and every single one of them.
Yes.
I think that every fucking day.
Yes. Like if, and I'm sure that a lot of people feel this way, but like if I had a team of experts in the field that I need at that given moment that like I could rely on, I don't even necessarily need them to do the work. That'd be helpful. But like, I also get a little atypical with things just to like I want to write a book and it's like, well, I need an editor or like, I need an agent. I don't even know how to get one, but like, if I had one, they could help me navigate all this stuff. And it's like, yes, if I had staff,
I could not relate to that more where like, it's this feeling of like, so my first show was a show called Madison Story Slam. It was in Madison, Wisconsin. If you've heard of The Moth, it was exactly that, where people come and tell true stories. We were in Madison before The Moth was, they followed us, but we did rip off their premise pretty drastically. So when I was doing Madison Story Slam, it was my wife and I, sole people. And we managed within 3 months to get sponsored by a pretty large brewery in the Midwest and paid my rent for the next 6 or 7 years just from doing that show. I had a full-time job besides that, but it's never been enough. Like, and now we live in Colorado too now, by the way. We moved from Wisconsin in April and moved to Steamboat Springs. And now I'm just like, kind of exactly what you said, your wife said to you, you hate working in an office. You just want to create, you've like, and you're going to die if you don't, that kind of thing. And so I'm applying for these jobs where I'm doing podcasts and I don't have the resume besides my own shows to prove that I can do this, but I know that I can. So it's kind of what you're saying, where you're like, if only I had a literary agent or an editor, a publisher who is at least interested. Hi friends. As we're sitting here talking about wishing that we had a team behind us as we're pursuing different creative endeavors and how much of a difference that would make in our lives, I thought, what better opportunity or what better time to tell you about Patreon? Patreon is a website where you can go and support the creative people doing the creative things that you enjoy. My guest today, Chris, has his own Patreon, and it's linked in the show notes if you feel like going to support him. And you should. He's doing the Lord's work, as they say. Beneath the link for Chris's Patreon, you'll see a Patreon for Mortarbox Media. Mortarbox Media produces this show, among a few others. And they're all produced with the intent of building community. If you'd like to partner with Mortarbox Media, visit the Patreon link below. And here's back to the show with me and Chris. Is a little bit motivation. Like I find myself, I'm not motivated until somebody else important has said, yeah, you're onto something. You should keep going.
I'm trying to think if I relate to that. Like on one hand, like I think everyone needs, you know, like affirmation from other people. And then there's also like the approval of someone that's like an expert or someone that's like in the field and like knows what they're doing. Like, of course that means a lot. It's like, I mean, for example, like I've started getting some like bigger followers on TikTok, like people that have like millions of followers, like the blue check marks. And like, to me, that is very, it shouldn't, like it, I know that logically that should not necessarily be something that is motivating.
But
for
you've
me,
been
but
conditioned by social media your entire life, like I have.
Right. It's like, well, these people have like done it and they are like telling me, hey, I appreciate your content. And it's like, okay, so I must be on the right track.
Yeah, it's interesting. So like, because I didn't think of it, you know, when you said the term approval, that makes it seem like a psychological thing that's negative.
Right.
And I didn't view it that way until you said it, but I guess that's what it is. But
I don't even know if that
an authority. So let me try and relate this to autism. I worked as a job coach for adults with disabilities, and many of my consumers were very severely autistic. So I know quite a bit. Autists are rule followers. And so I think a little bit of it is like the fact that an authority figure has like almost granted you permission to keep, for me, it's that an authority figure has almost granted me permission to keep pursuing my dreams. I don't know if you relate to that at all, but it, like there's, and what's even stranger is I fucking hate authority.
Like, well, okay. So I'm glad you said that because I didn't want to be like, no, like I disagree. I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong. I'm certainly projecting, which is all of my content is projecting.
That's all this is.
Yeah. But like what you're saying is that is the differentiator for me. I fucking hate authority. I hate authority because most of the time authority is used as I have a title. You should listen to me. I have seniority. You should listen to me. And it's like, oh, well, tough shit, Kathy. Like, I know that you've been here 20 years, but I've been here too. And I'm already the same level as you. Like, clearly you're not working that hard. Not to dismiss like their struggles in workplaces and things like that. But
right.
I mean, you know what I'm saying is like people that like they use authority or what we see as authority as an excuse to like tell people what to do. And a lot of the times it's like, you should not be telling me what to do. Like, I know just as much as you or more than you. So like, I agree with what you're saying about like disliking authority. And so that is like in my head when you're talking about, I know I use the word approval. I don't think that's quite the right word. I think I have the same hesitation that you do where it's like, I don't know if that's it. To me, it's more like I was saying, I think it's like, it's more of like a logical place where it's like these people clearly have figured out some aspect of it. Like they're doing well. And if they're telling me that I'm doing a good job, then I must be on the right track. Like, I think of like my last job, I did corporate sales for like 7 or 8 years. And when I started, I tried to latch on to the people that were doing very well at the job, not to like ride their coattails, but to see what they're doing and like figure out how to do that myself, but in my own way, and maybe even do it better. But then like when they started telling me, hey, you're doing a really good job, you're doing this right. Okay, this is some affirmation that I'm going in the right direction, which I'm now wondering, like, as I'm talking about this, I wonder if that stems from like how much of my life, and I think a lot of autistic people's life is spent feeling at odds with the world and being told that we're doing things wrong because we see things differently. So then to have someone that we see as like an expert or an authority figure that's earned it, like tell you you're doing it right, like maybe it just hits harder with us.
Do you,
I don't know.
In your personal life, if you're trying to figure out how to do something, this is something I run into quite a bit, whether it be music production, audio production, anything like that. I figure out a way to do a certain thing. And then somebody comes along and goes, oh, you know, you could literally just do this and it would be quicker and get you the same result. But for some reason I go, yeah, but that doesn't logically make sense. It has to logically make sense why the end result is that. And your little fix doesn't have any logic behind it. Does that resonate with you at all?
Yes. I am so much of like my brain is trying to find the optimal ways to do things. So like if someone does bring something to me and they say, this is a faster way to do it, I am all for it. If I understand why, because if something is arbitrary, my experience is most of the time there's a flaw with it. Most of the time you're cutting corners. Like shortcuts definitely work. Like there are definitely times that shortcuts pay off and it's a good idea. But then a lot of people also do shortcuts because they seem to be more okay with, I don't know, dealing with like a higher possibility that something might go wrong. And I very much struggle with that. Like I need to do things the right way. And so, yes, like I need to understand why. And if you can't explain to me why, I'm going to try and figure out why on my own. And if I figure out that there's a problem with it, or I can't figure out why at all, I guess there's two different things. If I figure out there's a problem with it, I'm not going to do it. If I can't figure out why, I'm going to try it out until I find a problem with it, or I find that it works. But I like just arbitrary things for me. It just drives me nuts. Like,
it's so funny. I think yesterday, I just had a conversation with my wife where I said, you know, I don't, I, I don't need to be right. I'm totally open to being wrong, but you have to bring a logical, like the reason I hold my truth or hold my convictions is because of logic. I've found the most logical thing to me. I'm totally open to the fact that my logic might be incorrect. But if you just come to me with, well, just because, well, then no, you've got no logic to support you.
Yeah, I very, very much so. One of the things that over the years I have been told by my wife is that I'm very sure of myself. But then I try to tell her, it's like, I'm sure of myself because I'm not sure of myself.
Right.
Like, you don't see what's going on in my head and like how often I am genuinely asking myself, am I wrong? Like, am I the wrong person here? Or am I thinking about this the wrong way? Like, I am open to a better understanding. I'm open to like being wrong because I care more about like having the best understanding or explanation. So if you give it to me, fuck yes, give it to me. Tell me I'm wrong all day, but explain to me. And then I will eat that shit all day. If it's just you're wrong with no explanation or a really bad explanation, then sorry, that does nothing for me.
Right. Like, for me, it's again, I say to her a lot, I say, I don't have to be right. I just want the right information to be out there. So like if I interject to somebody who's given the wrong information, it's not that I'm right and it's not that they're wrong. It's that everybody else in the group now has the wrong information and they will go out into the world and either base their life off of that wrong information or continue to spread it. And I hate that. Like, it just, that drives me nuts. Yeah. And if I'm wrong, I would want somebody to do the same thing to me. I want to know the right information. So you ran into issues, you know, in your relationship, specifically your marriage. A lot of your TikToks, I don't think it's ever overtly really said that, like, this character is my wife. But, like, I mean, I'm sure a lot of your content is purely based upon that that dynamic. And so how has that affected you guys? Has it been a net positive, your content specifically, or has it been, and what's her process in it? Does your wife have to say, yeah, you can portray this, that's totally fine?
This is one of the things I struggle with creating, is that at times I've had people think that I am talking about them, like maybe it's an underhanded message or something like that. And the problem is that like there's a select group of like relationships that you can draw from. Like there's family members, there's extended family members, there's partners, there's kids, there's friends. And I try to be generic, but specific enough that people relate to it. And the problem is that like then people in your life may see it and start to think that it's about them. And genuinely, like when I'm making my content, it is never about the people in my life. It's never supposed to be an underhanded message. In situations where I have like played a character that's supposed to be my partner, usually I'm trying to do something that my wife and I have talked about, and like maybe something we've struggled with over the years that like we have found a solution to and like we both agree with. Or I had one where I was talking about what is positivity. That was a conversation that we had like a week before. And I was like, this is a good fucking conversation. And I went home, or I went downstairs the next day and I wrote down like what I could, and I edited it to a like shorter script. People appreciated it. So some of the conversations I think are maybe a little more, I don't know, innocent is the right word. And then other ones, it may look like one of the partners is in the wrong. And I think that was a little bit of my learning curve, as I've tried to steer away from that a little bit. I don't want my viewers to get the impression that I'm like out here shit talking my wife, because it's never like what I'm going for.
For the record, I have never gotten that impression. I when you said that, I'm trying to even think back. I mean, I've been a fan for a long time, so I can't think of any off the top of my head. I think what you do a great job at doing with your characters is showing that each one is an individual. And that's really all the difference is. It's not one is better than the other. It's just we're all individuals.
Yeah. And that's what I try to do, because for me, a lot of the stuff that you read right now about autism, the way that the conversation is shaped is that the autistic person is a problem to be dealt with. The fact that I'm autistic means that I am the problem. There's a book called The Autism Couple's Workbook, which I started reading, and like I have so many problems with it, because like they'll have a chapter about communicating. It'll be like, here's how you get your autistic partner to listen. Here's how you get your autistic partner to remember something. Hey, just so you know, autistic people can't juggle more than one piece of information at once. But there's no part about like, here's how the autistic person gets the holistic partner to listen. Like, it's always very one-sided. And so like with my content, I'm trying to make it not just for autistic people to relate to, but I'm also hoping that some non-autistic people will see it and be like, oh, I relate with this character. Like, they're representing me. Sometimes I'm in the wrong, but like, hopefully it's in a way where it's not so offensive that they're not willing to listen.
Right.
And they're able to see like both points of view. So that's kind of what I try to to go for. But back to what you're asking about my wife, I mean, we've had discussions about it. We're both pretty open people, and we both try to, it's really important to us to try and help other people. And like you were saying about how if someone's putting wrong information out there and you're in the room, like, it's not necessarily that you have the right information. It's that, like, you just don't want people to walk away with just the wrong information. And so for me, I've seen, like, an abundance of wrong information. And so, like, we've had conversations where it's like, this is what we want to do. We want to share our experience and, like, let people learn from it and take away what they can. And so she's been extremely supportive of that. And not to say that there aren't times that some of the things maybe make her a little uncomfortable. I had an episode where I started talking about, like, sex and stuff. And I had someone reach out to me and say, can you talk about, like, autism and, like, sexuality? Because people don't talk about autism and, like, adult topics.
Right.
And so that one, like, I wanted to be really careful with. So I had three characters in there. And, like, I know in the process of making that, it's like, well, if I have one character or even two, people are going to assign this one is him or this one is him. And this must be his relationship. And that's where I think, like, sometimes it can get to be a little too invasive. And so I try to be very respectful of that.
You said it right. Invasive, intrusive. You don't want it to be, it's this thin line, this narrow road that you have to walk, because your content, and almost every bit of content on TikTok is personal. It comes from a place inside and experiences from that person. So your content is intrinsically tied to your relationship with your spouse, with your friends, with, you know, one thing I'd love to talk to you about, maybe if you come back for another episode, is how your mental health professionals, how they, if they see your TikToks, if they have certain things. So all that to say, but there is this narrow road that you have to walk that goes, hey, I want to put this information out there because I experienced something that led to this creative work or this movement, right? But I want to be respectful of the fact that I'm not the sole party in this experience. There was somebody else. And, like, how do you honor that? It reminds me of a conversation that Ashley, my wife, and I have had many times of, I really struggle to, like, actually go get an autism diagnosis because I feel like if I'm autistic, there are just some things, and I've said this to her, there's just some things that are never going to change. These things that are hard on our relationship, the onus is going to have to be on you. And that's really hard for me as a fixer to accept. You know, when I got diagnosed with diabetes, I lost 100 pounds in 6 months. I got my blood work in order. And, like, I am a fixer. If there's a problem, I want to fix it. I can't fix it if it's autism. There's nothing, like, there's just some handful of things that, yeah, I can work around this, that, and the other. But at the core, you will have to be the one that deals with the shitty part of this. And I hate that. I hate it.
What you're saying is, I think, how a lot of people feel and how I felt early on. But I also think it's a really good illustration of how the world has taught us that the autism is the problem. Because you're even saying, like, I can't fix it. And the way that I've come to view it, and maybe I'm wrong, but this is where I have landed, is the problem is not the autism. And again, like, I'm speaking about my autism. I know that autism presents differently for everybody. Some people, it does present, you know, higher needs with accommodations and things like that. There's certainly struggles with my autism, but I don't view that as the problem. The problem to me is the difference between our brains. My wife is, for all intents and purposes, autistic, and I'm autistic. And it's not that either one of our brains is wrong. It's the difference. Like, that is the problem. And I think that kind of takes, like, the onus off of either one feeling like guilt and, like, negative emotions, which I feel like kind of get in the way of helping to bridge the gap. And so to me, like, the way to fix that problem is exactly that. Like, how do you bridge the gap? Which then becomes talking about, like, you know, what are boundaries? And, like, here's something that I'm not able to do, but this is a need that I have. Okay, so how do we get creative to find something that honors my boundaries? But also, I need to make sure that your needs are being taken care of too, because you, as my partner, are, you're literally my other half. Like, you are the fucking most important thing in the world to me, second to my kids. But I need you to feel like you are being taken care of too. Not to paint a picture that, like, I'm great at this. I'm struggling with it too.
You heard it here first, folks. Chris is the is the saint of autistic relationships.
Amazing. But it's just, to me, that changes the conversation, which I think makes it a little more productive and, like, realistic. I understand what you're saying about, like, I had a lot of, like, issues with getting the diagnosis too, but that's where I think, to me, a lot of times I figure out how to reframe the situation in, like, a more healthy and productive way. Without lying, but, like, doing it in a way that's, like, better for everyone.
As you're talking about it, the what my brain did for me to help me, like, cement it is I'm 6'6" and my wife is, I think, 5'7" or 5'8". So I'm really tall. She's tall for a lady. You talked about the difference, and I think of the difference as the problem. Well, the problem is that Ashley can't reach things on the top shelf at the grocery store. But I've got no problem. I don't feel like there's an onus on me for that. It's something that I have no limitation against. So of course I'm the one to do that. Is that kind of what you're saying? Where like the difference of autism between somebody who's not autistic and somebody is like, yeah, it's not that you are a problem. It's that this difference is a problem and you just don't have the skill set for that difference. And so why not let your partner take over that part of the problem?
That is an amazing fucking analogy. Like, That's really good. Like, you're spot on. It's like, neither one is better. Neither one is worse. Both come with their own benefits and disadvantages. Like, I'm 6'3". I'm not quite as tall as you, but like, I have back issues and knee issues and I don't like flying. And like, there are downsides to being tall. And I'm sure there are advantages to your wife being a little bit shorter. She can fit in small spaces like aircraft
right.
easier. And picking up kids might be easier or heavier. Like, there's advantages and disadvantages, but then also like that dynamic of like you two being different heights and, you know, whatever comes with that physicality
right.
Being different heights, like that can cause issues. But exactly, you're right. It's neither one of you is wrong or at fault. Like, you're just different. I think that's a very healthy way to look at it.
I was so looking forward to this conversation, Chris, because I knew that part of it for me, I'm a verbal processor and people that I know who have autism couldn't have this level of conversation with me. And so because I've just had this internal dialogue, I've just been craving talking to somebody who at least knows about autism the way that somebody who is autistic, who is a high masking autistic person. I think somebody who's like me, if I'm autistic, I needed to talk this out with somebody. There's a lot that just in that last 5 minutes as we've been talking that unlocked for me about, even if I'm not autistic, that just helped me figure out some stuff in my relationship. So thank you for that. Just that right off the bat. But hey, I don't want to forget, would you mind coming on for another episode? We didn't even get to what I invited you to talk about. So would you mind coming
on? That popped into my head. Yeah, no, absolutely. I would love to come back. I have enjoyed this very much. I, like you, very much enjoy these conversations. And they're, you know, I found that people are more receptive to them than I think a lot of people realize, but like there's still far and few between. So I absolutely would love to come back.
Awesome. Cool. Well, listeners, my next guest in 2 weeks is actually another TikTok content creator. His name is Barrick Hardley. He does a lot of AI content creation, among many other things. You may have seen him in his guest role on The Office, where he plays a PhD candidate studying the blue-collar worker in like the Northeast. It's going to be really good. But after that episode, Chris is going to come back. I for sure want to talk to Chris about his relationship, to whatever degree he wants to talk about it. Chris, I want to talk to you about how your mental health professionals in your life view your content if they know about it. And then I also want to talk more about the video. But Chris, before this episode ends, is there anything you want to let the listeners know about? Where can they find you? Do you have stuff coming up? All that good stuff.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I am on TikTok. That's primarily where my platform is right now. I'm Generic Art Dad or Chris Gad on there. Also venturing out into a little more YouTube with some longer form content. Tends to be a little more serious. Like the video you were mentioning, like what should I do if I think I might be autistic? So that's primarily where I'm at right now.
Like always, you can find links to everything that Chris is doing in the show notes. Just go down there. And you can find us on TikTok. We're hi.friends. And then also Instagram, hi.friendspod. I had the TikTok that was the same, but I created the password when I was high.
Done that.
Completely lost it. Have no idea what that account, how to get into it. But we're currently doing something on TikTok where we're trying to get Post Malone to come on the show. And really at this point, I'm just doing it for the engagement because they're the videos that get the most views when you're trying to get people on. So,
yeah.
But Chris, thank you so much for being on this episode. I hope my listeners have learned a ton. I have. I've certainly enjoyed our conversation and I cannot wait to get you on again to talk more. Hi Friends is a production of Mortarbox Media.
So, you're autistic now?
I'm definitely looking into the possibility.
Well, I certainly don't have anything funny to say about that.
Well, I should hope so.
Time to end, hi Friends. Lumpin' ba, lumpin' ba, lumpin' ba. do it.